I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you're listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business. My guest today is Ty Nathan Clark, a true polymath. Ty has recently focused his considerable intellect toward the form of contemporary abstract painting. You can view his latest exhibit through the end of the month at Cultivate 712, and in our interview, you'll hear about his entrepreneurial experiences as a professional basketball player, outdoor retailer, PR campaigner, film producer, and more. But first, it's the Residential Recap with Austin Hooper. Austin Hooper is in the studio again this month for the Residential Recap, where he divines what's happening in Waco housing. How are you today, sir?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm excellent, and I'm particularly happy by seeing all of this housing data for the state of Texas. So a record 30,000 homes were sold in April 2019, and there's low mortgage rates and a frothy labor market that are spurring demand across the price spectrum. The median home price in Texas is $238,000 and generally staying on the market for about 60 days. How do those state numbers compare with what you're seeing here in McLennan County?
That tracks pretty closely with what we have going on at home here. Average days on market last month, May 2019, was 54 days. And the average close price was $218,000. So just below that median number that we're seeing statewide. And that 218,000 number is a 6% increase over May of last year. So I think those numbers are tracking with what we've been talking about over the last few months, whereas in the previous few years, we've seen about an average of a 10% increase in value year over year. This year, that's been more like 5-6%. So values are still going up, but at a more manageable rate.
It's that phrase, as you so eloquently put it, slowing but growing. That's what we're seeing here in the housing market. And the fact that the houses are moving more quickly out of Waco than they are in the state of Texas shows that there are people who are wanting to pull the trigger in a lot of multiple offer situations.
Absolutely. You know, we are still very affordable, you know, compared with some of the other fast-growing cities in Texas. So I've had a number of clients that we're looking at multiple areas to move in Texas coming from California or other parts around the country, and they ended up choosing Waco because of the affordability. And especially that more affordable price point, I'm going to define as under $150,000. It is just really tough right now to get in a home at that price point. There's a lot of demand, a lot of people moving into the Waco market that are after a product like that, and we simply just don't have enough supply. So we've seen especially that in the market is really hot right now.
Last year, I remember you saying that these central Waco neighborhoods were very hot and Woodway was a little bit sleepy, but there's been a reverse of that pendulum.
Yeah, traditionally, Woodway, Hewitt, that 84 corridor was just exploding, and that was a really hot market. And I think last year we saw a lot of new construction out there hit the market. And so the average days on market or the resale market of existing homes, we saw those days on market start creeping up a little bit compared to the historical numbers, whereas in Waco proper, that was the really, really hot market. So I think there was supply and demand in play there out in Hewitt with all the new construction coming on market. This year, I've seen that kind of switch back to what we were used to in previous years, where that Hewitt, Woodway, Midway ISD market is really hot right now and really tough to find a home over there.
You've got great boots on the ground in all of McLennan County, Austin. Tell our listeners really quickly, what's a neighborhood that currently has your eye and you've been seeing a little something special from it?
Really love the Brookview neighborhood, which sort of loosely defined as Waco Drive up to Bosque between New Road and 30th Street thereabouts. And I love it because it's still close to downtown. You know, you're 3 or 4 minutes from uptown, 6 or 7 minutes from downtown, but you're also in sort of the more established residential part of Waco, super close to Valley Mills, Waco Drive, Bosque, Target, those districts as well. And just the neighborhood character in general, lots of big, gorgeous oak and pecan trees, wide streets, very walking friendly, and lots of green space. There's the green belt that runs along Brookview Drive, S.J. Guthrie Park, Crestview Park. It's a really, really fun, family-friendly neighborhood.
Austin Hooper breaking down the housing market here for us every month with the Residential Recap. Thank you so much for stopping by the studio.
Thanks for having me.
I'm now joined in studio by commercial real estate expert Greg Gleim for What's Happening Here, a monthly segment where Greg breaks down and often breaks the latest news in Waco's retail sector. Since you were last on the show, there have been a few high-profile moves in East Waco. Let's start off with the Train Waco building.
Yeah, I caught wind of the Train Waco building coming onto the market just a few weeks ago, and it sounds like those guys have secured a spot over in the old QTI building at Valley Mills Drive in Franklin. So with them moving out, it opens up a big box building in East Waco. My understanding is it's either under contract or they've got a tenant for it already. So I think mum's word there, not much has gotten out, but I'm excited to see what ends up filling that building.
So Train Waco had been operating a CrossFit box near the Magnolia Silos. They moved to Elm, were there for months, and now are going to be moving more toward Central Waco. But this is a building that's at 713 Elm Avenue, 23,000 square feet, and it's finished out. That's a problem that people run into in East Waco, is that they want to be there, but there aren't necessarily spaces that are move-in ready. This is a large area that anybody could move into. What kinds of uses would you see for a space in a location like this?
Yeah, I think Elm, and you touched on it, you know, I've talked with a lot of people that are looking to get into the East Waco market or move their business there, but there's no buildings that are ready to be occupied. So this solves that issue, and whether it could be repurposed into a multi-tenant building or a multi-use building is yet to be seen. But I think it'd be adequate for any retail or big box kind of family entertainment that we've talked on the show before, that I know there's a few prospective businesses looking in the Waco area for that. So that's a nice thing with a large finished out kind of white box there, is it can be repurposed for many different uses. And that's why I'm excited to see what ends up filling the space.
Maybe one of those hatchet throwing companies decides to drop down in East
Waco. I think it'd be a great place for them.
A couple blocks closer to the river on the 500 block of Elm Avenue is the beautiful Kessner's building. It's historic and has been a real placemaker on Elm Avenue for a number of years now. That recently was sold to the group that's developing the Waco Food Hub over on Dallas Street next to the old farmers market. What have you heard about this development on Elm Avenue and really what that group of guys are bringing to East Waco?
Yeah, I think that group of guys, I was fortunate to be able to tour that food hub about 2 weeks ago. And I can tell you one thing about those guys is they execute plans and they do it right. I think the food hub is a great concept. I haven't heard exactly what they'll be placing into the Kessner's building, but I do understand they've closed on it.
So what I heard from one of the partners, Gidon Rosing, is that they will be, of course, refurbishing the whole Kessner's building. But on the raw land to the side of it that abuts Factory Street, they will be constructing a two-story building. So it'll be something that is in line with the Kessner structure and just brings more density and a sense of place to Elm Avenue.
It does, and it brings great operators, and I don't know if you've seen some of their other projects, but they do an excellent job on their construction, real unique, and so it'll be a great feather in the cap to have in East Waco, having that group there.
Get you out of here on this, Greg. Judge Ed Kincaid's apartment deal at 101 Elm Avenue there at Elm and MLK. It's going to be a beautiful entryway to the East Waco corridor. $4 million deal, three-story apartment complex with 31 units and 1,800 square feet of retail on the ground. What does this mean for the viability of East Waco?
I think that's the gateway to it. I think I think the project looks excellent. It's a great product. It brings density immediately to East Waco. So it's exciting that they've broken ground. I hear they have 1,800 feet of retail space. Boy, I sure would love to lease that for them, but haven't been able to get in contact with them yet. But regardless, I think that's a great gateway and a great start to East Waco Elm Avenue there.
Thank you so much for stopping by Downtown Depot for What's Happening Here.
Absolutely. Thank you.
I'm now joined in studio by Ty Nathan Clark. Ty is a contemporary abstract artist living in Waco, and his show, Lessons in Remembering Part 2, Lost, Recovered, and Remaining, is currently at Cultivate 712 throughout the end of the month. Ty, welcome to the program.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
Tell me a little bit about your Waco history, Ty.
Well, it's relatively new. So Waco history, we've lived here for 2 years, my wife and myself. And I think over the last, I would say 15 years, we've spent a considerable amount of time doing business and making friendships and relationships with a lot of people in Waco.
How did you end up in Waco?
We were in Austin for the last 8 years prior to moving. And as we were looking at expanding not only my business as an artist, which is wanted to have a larger studio for my studio practice, we knew we were going to have to leave Austin. We knew we were going to have to move because we wanted to buy a house for the first time. And I really wanted to build a studio on my property rather than rent one somewhere else. And just through a series of trying to figure out where we were going to go and how we were going to afford it, Waco for a couple years was just kind of on our roadmap.
I know that Mandy and you moved here from Austin, but even while you were living in Austin and before that, you've been involved in a lot of different things. You were a professional basketball player. You are a poet. You are an artist. You've worked in film. Can you give our listeners a little bit of an idea of the winding road that you took to end up here in Waco as a working artist?
Yeah, it's a crazy winding road. I know art was always the end goal at some point, but when you want to be a working artist, you kind of have to find a roadmap of ways to afford living and creating to get to a point where maybe someday you could actually work in art full time. And so I played basketball for a long time, and I would say that the end of my basketball career was short-lived just through injuries. And I wanted to continue to play overseas and do things, and injuries and life just kind of made me make the decision of it's time to move on. And so then I ended up working in retail and worked for Quiksilver, the surf company in California, and worked my way up pretty rapidly with them over about 6-7 years. And then my wife and I moved overseas to China and built a coffee shop that we ran there with our church in the Dallas area. And then after a year there, we moved back unexpectedly. But here we were back in the States and had ideas of entrepreneurship. And I found a job on Craigslist with a Chinese electronics company that had just moved from Hong Kong, and literally the man who invented the helmet camera. So the way GoPro and everybody creates is because of this guy, Raymond Ling, sold his shares at one of the largest electronics companies in Hong Kong to move to Flower Mound because they had great schools for his kids. And he hired me to be his marketing director with no experience because I could speak a little bit of Mandarin. And he basically paid for me to learn how to do international marketing, SEO stuff, PR. I got me hired by Kodak and these huge electronic firms that were friends of his to do PR campaigns with some of the largest PR companies in the world, from Edelman to others, and paid for me to take Google courses. And I mean, literally invested in me for a few years to help build his company. And we built at the time the largest helmet camera company in the beginning, and we were competing against GoPro as they launched as well. And so then my wife and I started a fashion brand through that experience, which is something we wanted to do. And we were at the time one of the first social entrepreneurships there were. We started at the same time as Tom's and did a lot of stuff with Tom's Shoes in the beginning when they started. And we toured the U.S. for 2 years with my art and fashion. And that road led to meeting a guy named Greg McEvely in Dallas, who I came on to just kind of mentor through the startup business process. And through that, we started Kamek together.
Were you able to be a better mentor to Greg because of the experience that you had had with the Chinese national who had mentored you and opened up doors for you?
Oh, 100%. I mean, that just doesn't happen. I mean, that was such an invaluable experience for me to be able to, number one, build a brand with somebody who was Toy Maker of the Year award in the world like 5 times. He did stuff for Mattel and, I mean, all the huge toy companies. This guy is just incredible. And he just let me learn while he's building a brand. I was able to take that to our fashion company, Veritas. We built that, and then we ended up taking all that information and all of just our wealth of knowledge and helped Greg start Kamek. And I think all of that experience was exciting to have to go, okay, now we're going to go do a startup that could really make waves.
How different would starting Veritas today look like from when you had started it technologically and with the other things that you had at your disposal?
Man, clothing is one of the most difficult things to do in the world, fashion. I just think from a finance perspective, you always have to have capital because you're always creating the next line. And so, you know, while you're selling one line and sending it to retail and building your brand, you're also already creating the next season's line with capital before things have sold or while things are selling. So I think just from, you know, a knowledge perspective, things would have been done very different. I think print on demand for small fashion brands is like probably the most incredible thing anybody can do, because you're able to collect money, print, and can, you know, you continually have money and capital in the bank, rather
sort of
than
the
just,
Kickstarter model.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure.
Yeah, you can just put some mock-ups of t-shirts that we might print,
yeah,
see which people want them, and then you go and print the shirts.
Mm-hmm.
You had art throughout each one of these. You were finding ways to make art through fashion, finding ways to make art through a PR campaign.
Mm-hmm.
How did you deal with the desire to be doing, I guess, more like personal creative art and finding a way to discover art in your more mundane, necessary tasks?
Well, I think I kept it all separate. And I think for an artist, I have to do that, because at the end of the day, being a studio artist and a painter and a sculptor was the end goal. And it's really easy to get life muddled when you're working in startups and in the entrepreneur and accelerator world and building brands. I have to keep that separate, because the other side is the joy of life for me. The other side has joys mixed with the grind, the day-to-day, the building, the hard work, the feet to the ground. And so while I was doing everything else, I was continually finding extra time to paint, you know, weekends, late at night, things like that, so I can continually build my craft as a fine artist.
You're the only person I know who has a connection with both Dirk Nowitzki and Steph Curry.
Uh-huh.
Probably the only person in Waco with those credentials, too. Tell me a little bit about that.
Man, so I'm a producer on a documentary, I can now say award-winning documentary film titled Jump Shot. We won the Grand Jury Best Feature Documentary Award at Dead Center Film Festival. But yeah, I have the pleasure of Steph Curry being our executive producer. But we just had some incredible, miraculous moments where these guys wanted to be a part of our film through people connected to our team, and they jumped. I mean, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, are massive parts of this film. Steph, of course, is our executive producer and an even bigger part from another side. And then Dirk, that guy is one of my favorite people on the planet. I mean, he's just such a ham.
Oh, yeah.
And just a sweet, sweet man. And he is a very strong character in the film as well.
You're hearing from Ty Nathan Clark, a contemporary abstract artist working here in Waco. Throughout the month at Cultivate, you have been putting on different workshops and conversations, and one of them was about collecting art and, mm-hmm. and what that means and why that's important.
Yeah, I mean, one of the most crucial parts of being a fine artist, the gallery world, and creating a community where the arts culture is strong are patrons. Patron would be considered somebody that supports the arts. I know the Waco Symphony has a very strong core of patrons that helps it survive and keep going and continually create incredible work. And that's one thing that the fine arts community needs really bad, I think, in Waco, because we have to survive as artists in this town if we're going to create. And something that a patron or somebody that buys and collects local art does is it builds a buzz amongst the community, because when you have a work of original art in your home, you talk about it. It becomes a focal feature of conversation, not just with your family, but also with your friends. And what that does is it creates this buzz where people start talking about this local artist that somebody collects or has in their home. Well, then they have a show in town. So then that community all comes out to the show, and they're comfortable with that work, and they're excited about this individual whose work they've invested in. And what that does is creates a ripple effect of conversation. And I think that's something that Waco really needs to figure out the way on. How can we invest in this? How can we draw people in who are interested in collecting and buying art? And how do we get them involved in that as well?
Living in Waco, 3 hours driving distance between Dallas, Austin, Houston, San Antonio, there's incredible art for anyone to go experience.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's also a hard part, but it's also, I think, something that kind of lends us, we don't have any excuses here in Waco. We have a great art program at Baylor. I've gotten to know quite a few of the professors over there, and they have a stellar cast of professors and admins in the Baylor Art Department. We have an incredible, vibrant city that is growing on so many entrepreneur levels, so many exciting levels, that I think because we're on 35 in between those great cities, there should be even more buzz within the arts community. So hopefully there are some great artists here in town who have brilliant, brilliant minds as far as art's concerned, that I think there's a little teeny inkling starting. I don't think anything's really happened yet. We've had some exciting shows and things come to town. But at the end of the day, the community has to support the arts, not a traveling show, not visiting artists. At the end of the day, our community needs to support visual arts.
That's a great point, Ty. And it can't just be Cultivate 712. The Art Center of Waco, which was at McLennan County Community College, is working on a space over there on 8th Street, but they aren't really showing right now. I think they have a little bit of space at Cultivate, but in terms of having their own physical location, and there need to be 10 other places. There's the Kieran Sistrunk Gallery, which recently opened up. But you have to have more opportunities for people to show stuff so that as a customer, you can start to have more interest in niches. You know, like someone who really loves contemporary art is going to love yours. And if there were a contemporary art gallery, they could go there and they could see other work that is similar to yours and that they could start collecting that.
Absolutely. And I'm so excited for Claire and the Art Center team once the building gets open. I'm really, really excited for that. And I think, you know, it's difficult because art is risky. It's a very risky business because it's 100% sales-driven model. So a gallery owner, the way that they're going to make money is by pushing that artist and getting people in to see the work and spreading knowledge about what this work means and figuring out who in town has the money. Where is this finance coming from that can support and buy local art? And when you have big cities where the arts are flourishing, it's hard to draw people out to create something new somewhere else. And so I think there are great artist groups here in town. I think the Mammoth Collective is doing some incredible stuff. Brilliant group of female artists here in Waco. And they're doing backyard shows. I mean, that's what needs to happen here, is if there are no spaces, let's create our own.
Well, that's been happening a lot with the music scene, where people will host a house concert because there aren't enough viable venues.
Yeah, the stuff Jacob's doing with Keep Waco Loud and drawing and creating and finding those spaces, is that's what we're going to start doing soon with the arts here as well. There's lots of conversations happening, and I think you're going to start seeing underground shows pop up around the city and build that little kind of almost below the culture swell, which then in turn leads to an overflow into the cultural spill in Waco.
You are clearly a polymath with a lot of different abilities and various, maybe even offsetting industries. Did you get flack from your parents or from business partners or anyone that you're involved with too many things or your brain is in too many different spots?
You know, I never have. I think there was one of the men that actually married my wife and I told me a long time ago, I think this was early on in college, he said, "Ty, I'm really worried about you. You have so many things that you want to do and that you try to do." He said, "Just make sure you do a few really, really well." But I think that kind of stuck in my head, so that anytime I've done something, I put 100% of focus into it in that time. But I've also been very upfront with people, from guys that I've started businesses with, people that I've consulted on things, that I'm not going to be here long term. And I've given commitments. I can be here for 3 years. I can be here for 5 years, and tried to figure out that way to balance really focusing hard and doing things with excellence, knowing that I'm probably going to bounce to something new sooner.
You've given 110% of yourself for the current exhibition at Cultivate 712, Lessons in Remembering Part 2, Lost, Recovered, and Remaining. If someone were to walk into the gallery, what would they see?
They're going to see my memories on a wall. And memories that have been lost that I can never get back, stories from my childhood that, you know, you're never able to revisit again. You can revisit them in your mind, but those moments aren't going to happen again. Memories that are recovered, things that came to me that through the five senses or through reading or listening to music, you get this flood of memories back, something you forgot. So they're going to see these recovered memories, and then remaining, things that are causing new memories to form and the memories that are going to come. And so the sculptures, the assemblage pieces, and the paintings are all focused around those thoughts.
What are some points of inspiration for you currently? And how do you find those points of inspiration?
I'm constantly keeping myself inundated in literature, poetry, film, music. I'm currently reading and studying thoroughly the School 1 and School 2 of Abstract Expressionists from New York. post-World War II up to about the 70s. One of my favorite books is Ninth Street Women by Mary Gabriel, which is about nine female abstract expressionists who are very, very core to everything that happened back then in New York with the birth of abstract expressionism, which a lot of female artists are usually the ones that are left out of the conversation. And these are nine women who are, heavily influential in that time.
I'm headed to New York City next week. I'm going to be staying at the Parker Hotel. And Dorothy Parker, another one of those talented female artists who gets overlooked often because she was doing all of her work in the early part of the 1900s. Mm-hmm. What should I be looking for in the city? Do you spend much time in New York? Do you travel around? Like, are there certain types of galleries that you like to be in?
Yeah, when we were filming Jump Shot in New York, we were doing some stuff with the NBA and a number of sports personalities in New York. So we spent a lot of time there over about a 3-year period. Obviously, there are your hot galleries. There are your older established galleries. And I really like the new upcoming emerging galleries. Like Deli Grocery. There's just a bunch that are small that are artist-formed or collaborative, because I think a lot of the new thought and the new ideas come out of those less established galleries, and those are the ones to me that are really exciting to visit.
Dr. Jane Dameron, who was a guest here recently, she was in New York City, mm-hmm. and visited the Zwerner Gallery, and she's so good at posting on Instagram that I saw that and I added it to my... So I'm going to be going and checking out the Zwerner Gallery.
Go see the Joan Mitchell exhibition.
Yeah. But Dr. Dameron and you will be having a conversation soon.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. Dr. Jane Dameron and her husband Caleb are really good friends of my wife's and mine. And we are going to actually have a moderated discussion by Jane on the philosophy behind my art. And I think it's going to be incredible.
So that will be tonight, June 21st at 8 p.m. at Cultivate 712. You can hear Dr. Jane Dameron talking to Ty Nathan Clark about what it means to look at a big blank canvas and put something on it.
You may want to cut the date again. You said tonight.
Ty, in closing, can you tell me just briefly about what you're feeling currently as being an artist in Waco and what you think the prospects are for someone who wants to live and work and create in this community?
Well, we have a lot. There are a lot of challenges to being a working artist in Waco. I already discussed, you know, the patrons and the support of people purchasing art to support artists here in town. But there's really not much here as far as, like, when you look at the art world, you're looking at burgeoning galleries and a vibrant scene. Everybody comes out at a new opening. The press is always talking about it. There are just things moving and shaking on a regular basis. Because we're very new and I would say infantile in that stage, you're going to have little pocketed events, you know, over a month, one or two, you know, maybe one, maybe not even any in a month. And so we need a vibrant flow of things that are regularly happening on a regular basis, because if the community doesn't know, they already have plans. There's so many different things going on in town. So when there isn't a repetition of events and a repetition of things to create a swell, you can lose momentum at times and things can evaporate. And I think it comes down to the artists, number one, but it also comes down to the community supporting that group of artists. And I think things are going to happen. I just don't know what that timeline looks like yet.
Ty Nathan Clark is a contemporary abstract artist in Waco. Find him on Instagram and perk up your feet a little bit. Ty, thank you so much for stopping by Downtown Depot.
Oh, had a blast. Absolute pleasure.
Thanks again to Ty Nathan Clark, Austin Hooper, Greg Glime, and you for tuning in here on KWBU. If you want updates in between shows, follow Waco Business News on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And be sure to join me back here for another episode on the first Friday of July. I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you've been listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business.